listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kolula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hollywood, it's your host of the most, Nikki Kolula. We're going to jump right into this interview. It's a sizzling hot one because my AC is out. So if you see me sweating beads, that's what is going on with me. So anyways, we have a special singer-songwriter, very talented indeed, Miss Sabrina Cyan. How are you, Sabrina?
Hello, I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Trying to stay cool, doing my best.
It's rough out here in the summertime. Late August is the worst time.
Yes, it's like late August, September is when it's like all the AC units around the valleys and all over LA, they kind of convene and they say, let's all give out during the hottest months.
Yeah, they're going on strike. They're overworked.
They're like, we're not doing this anymore. Yeah. So I get it. I get it.
So unionize.
Yes, I know. They do. Just like the musicians union, we need a real union that is strong, but it's not as strong as it should be. But let's talk about you tonight. Let's go back to the moment of Zen. What was the moment of Zen that made you fall in love with music and want to become a songwriter?
Wow. Okay. So I think about this a lot. I've always been singing. I've probably been writing songs since I was six. It's just always been in me. And I remember writing little tunes with my friends in the schoolyard. And then one of my friends betrayed me and I wrote like a song called Sick of You. And, it went triple platinum in my own house in my own notebook. But I feel like it's even before my memory. I'm lucky enough to have been captured on a family video. We were looking at some home videos the other day, and we were on a cruise, and there was a lounge singer with her band, and there was nobody in front of the stage. So I was probably like 3 or 4 years old, and my little legs walk up to the singer, and as I hold my hand out, and I just look, I have the face of like awe, and I'm just completely enraptured, and I just go all the way up to the front of the stage and like stick my hand out and look up. And so I feel like that must've been it.
Well, I mean, that sounds like a pretty profound moment. I mean, especially that your family got it on tape. That's like the little moment where you're like, okay, she loves music. We need to get her a piano. We need to get her some instruments. So how did you start playing piano? You started around 6 years old?
Yeah, I think either five or six, probably six. I do have it's still framed. It's like a happy birthday note from my piano teacher, and I turned 7. So I know that I was at least 5 or 6 when I started. And I started classically. When I was around the age of 12, I kind of quit the classical route and started just improvising with the chord progressions I already knew. And that's really when I started songwriting, actually.
I didn't know how to do that because I'm curious, because I actually started when I was 5 playing classical and I was singing classically. And I took a break right around 12 or 13. And I was just like, I don't want to play piano anymore. Like, I don't want to play classical music. I'm done. And I didn't think about, oh, you know what? You can use it towards rock until I was in high school and until the Beatles came into my life and I started learning Beatles songs. So how did you know, like, oh, I'll take these chords and just start improvising? Were you listening to jazz? Were you listening to players like that?
Sorry, I will answer your question, but I'm just so captivated by this idea that so many people stop the classical route exactly at that age. At 12 or 13. Right. And I'm just so interested about why that's the breaking point for a lot of people. I think
most, it's just not cool. It's not cool when you're in middle school. Like, you know, it's like, and there's a divide. I remember seeing like people playing in orchestras and doing that. And I did marching band. I was trying to figure out what it was, but I think for me, I was listening to rock music. I was never listening to classical music unless I had to work on classical music. So that's when I kind of knew, well, this doesn't speak to me. But when I heard the Beatles playing kind of Bach-esque songs in a rock format, I was like, oh, this intrigues me because this is modern. This is accessible. I can hear people singing this. Like I'm wanting to sing it. So there's a connect with classical music for a certain point, I think, for technique. But then when it comes to socializing, I'm sure you felt the same. It's like, I'm done with classical music. I don't want to do this. What was it for you that made you fall out of love with it?
I think that it's very rigid, the route that a lot of classical teachers take you on. Right. It's very much, there's like a structure. There are these set practice pieces that you play, and there are the set books. And I think there's not enough of an opportunity to let the... to give children like access to parts of classical music that they might actually be interested in or that relates to other music that they know about. Like you said, there's so much music that infuses classical techniques, you know, into the texture of let's say like a rock or pop song. I got really, I mean, this is way down the line when I discovered Rufus Wainwright. Just the best. And I was enthralled. My mind was expanded. And I think that really shaped my understanding of how to integrate like Baroque and classical and romantic techniques.
I know one of my favorite songs of his is Beautiful Child. I think that's the name of it. I don't know if you know that song, but it is.
Actually, don't.
Oh my God. Okay. I'm going to say
I'm a fake song. Fake fan.
No. And I'm going to tell you, it is seriously one of the most orchestrated songs I've ever heard in my life. There's a mariachi band, there's strings, there's a rock band, and it is used so well in the rock format or the songwriter format, however you want to look at it. And that's what blew me away about him. It's like, you're not just writing a song with a band, which is good enough. You know what I mean? For me, even just a song that's written, played acoustic is good enough. But when you add all this other stuff and you use it so well, that's genius to me, you know? So I love that you love him because he's a great songwriter.
He's a great songwriter. And I, like you said, I just appreciate when great songwriting is enhanced and supported by great production and like really intricate orchestration. And I just nerd out about that. And it's just like, he always just goes so big when it needs to go big. And then he goes so intimate when it needs to be intimate. And I think it's just really admirable.
So you were hearing this lounge singer at a young age. What were the songwriters that stopped you in your tracks, maybe in middle school, high school, when you left classical music? Who were those influences for you?
Regina Spektor. I was so into Regina Spektor, especially because, you know, I grew up on piano. I was just really captivated by her storytelling and the unique way that she uses the piano and that she's not afraid to make like weird noises, like weird, like dolphin noises. And it felt so free and like kitschy, which is a reference to her debut album. But yeah, I was very into Regina Spektor. And there's another huge artist back then.
Fiona Apple?
You know, I feel like Fiona Apple, everyone tells me that my stuff reminds me of her stuff, but I never listened to her when I was younger. The same thing goes for Sarah Bareilles. I think we're very comparable, but I didn't listen to her much when I was younger. But of course, I love the stuff now.
Sarah Bareilles is actually a friend of mine.
Really?
I play a lot of shows together. She used to open for me for years, and we
my gosh,
all the time, and we used to play shows. Where did we play shows? We played shows at the Temple Bar all the time. I think we played at the Mint a couple times.
No way.
She's just amazing. She was amazing back then. We all kind of knew she was going to get signed because she would she'd play like a 9 o'clock slot on a Friday, which is not an easy slot because people are getting ready to go out. And we would play the 11 o'clock slot and she would bring 200 people to a 9 o'clock slot. And it was like, oh, okay, this is what a rising star looks like. Yeah. Right. So, but she's a great writer. She's always been a great writer. And funny story is when she was doing her first record, I emailed her and I said, man, you got Matt Chamberlain on your record playing drums. He's one of my favorite drummers. That's so awesome. You must be on cloud nine. And she was like, actually, I'm at the moment, I'm kind of pissed off because I just submitted my record to my label and they said they can't hear a single, you know? And she said, I've just been so pissed. And then she wrote, what was the first?
It was Love Song. Yeah, the song about.
Love Song. I'm not going to write you a love song. So she wrote that song maybe 2 weeks later or a week later after we were emailing about it. And she was in the moment of being so angry. And I think her second record, she had the same response from some A&R. And she did the same thing. She wrote King of Anything. And she was like, why are you, you know, going to be the commanders of my art? And I've always loved that about her. She's been rebellious creatively, because there's a way where you can be rebellious and destructive, but she's been rebellious creatively. So I love that, you know, you're being introduced to those songwriters, because Fiona Apple and Sarah Bareilles, for what you do, are great songwriters to draw from and listen to. But you're already listening to great people. So you said Regina Spektor was one. Who was another two or three that you were really just influenced by? Male, female, bands, doesn't matter.
I listened to a lot of like angsty music back then. Like I would listen to The Fray, like Break Even, like Mad World. I was really in my feels. My parents got divorced. I was like, it was a whole thing. I did listen to The Fray a lot, honestly.
I opened for them. I opened for The Fray with Isaac as the singer, because, you know, he left the band. I don't know if you knew that, but it's such a bummer because he's like one of my favorite songwriters. And he left the band. I think he was having either he was battling alcohol or something with home life or something. So he left the band. And so the guitarist is doing all of his vocals now. And it's not the same. It's just, to me, it's not the same. But I love that band. And you said Mad World. I actually met Gary Jules at the Hotel Cafe when he played that song live before it got this huge radio push. Because I remember meeting him and I was like, man, that's a great cover of Mad World. That's an amazing song. But your cover is ridiculous. He's like, yeah, it's kind of haunting, isn't it? And then like a month later, it just blew up. It was on every soundtrack, trailer. I mean,
yeah.
How did you find these songwriters? Did you like find them on YouTube? Did you find them on TV shows? Like, how did you find these artists?
I mean, if we're talking about middle school and early high school, it has to have been like the Vampire Diaries, where I remember there was like a website where you could search like per episode what were the songs that were in the episode, and then I would go like episode by episode and just add to my Spotify playlist, and I think that's where I got a lot of my music.
Well, I mean, you know what? It's what I love is like when there's a marriage between TV shows and music or film and music. I miss, like, you know, I don't know if you ever got into the Garden State soundtrack, but that was like one of the last soundtracks where front to back every song was amazing, and it was like huge artists and indie artists all on one soundtrack. And you just don't see that anymore. You don't see like soundtracks having this boom, 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 boom. I can buy a soundtrack playlist and just fall in love with it front to back. It just doesn't happen, but it does happen with TV shows. You do. I find myself Shazamming songs while watching TV, probably more than anything. And like, what is that song? Who is that?
Yeah.
Finding them. Or it's from like I just saw somebody posting a song like to one of their just videos of their dog. And I was like, oh, what is this song? So it's like when people use them as their own soundtracks too, I love discovering music like that. So you were an angsty teen for sure.
I really was.
That's awesome.
Well, that what you said makes me think. So, okay, I've been in a bit of a rabbit hole watching The Summer I Turned Pretty, which is on Amazon Prime, and their soundtrack is so awesome and it's so current. Like they program a lot of currently popular music, but it just works so well. And it makes me think about how I think putting a song into a TV show or movie obviously enhances the scene.
Yes.
And the emotionality of the scene. But I just thought about how it works in the other direction too, where having a narrative to go along with the song, it actually can bring out the song's meaning in a way that you might not have noticed outside of the context of the show, you know?
Yep. I think that's so important. And what's funny about you saying that is I've gotten syncs, you know, where on various TV shows, and it's great. It's cool because it's like great money, but you know, there's a lot of times where people are paying you and the song's not used well. And so like, I've been telling my publisher, I'm like, listen, I'm at the age now where I want to make art. Like I want to find filmmakers that are making things that I want to marry my songs to or vice versa, because that's why I love music. And that's why I love scenes in movies and movies. When it's like, you see a Cameron Crowe movie, for me, Cameron Crowe is one of the best to marry songs to a visual. He did it with Your Eyes for the movie Say Anything. He did it with Almost Famous, with Tiny Dancer. These are huge songs, but he catapulted these songs to be larger than life because of the scenes they were in, and they were creating those, you know, musical mosaics for, you know? So I love that you fall in love with the visuals. When you write, are you kind of creating movies in your mind as a songwriter, or are you creating scenes like as a songwriter that you're painting when you're writing lyrically?
That's a really good question. I think most of my stuff thus far has been autobiographical. So I guess less so than painting scenes, I'm referring to memories that have already been painted. But I do, I am wanting to venture more into the world of fantasy with my storytelling. So maybe in the future, I'll be making some movies in my mind.
I can see that. Because you, first of all, your songs are very cinematic. We just played together for Songwriters in the Round last month. I got to tell you, I was very blown away with your songwriting. I'm like,
thank you.
This girl can write a song, sing a song, play a song. And it's really rare when you see somebody that can marry all three in such a perfect balance. And you do that really well. So do you usually start with the groove on piano? Do you start with a theme? Do you start? Tell me your songwriting process from birth to the finishing product.
So, okay, I would say that the origin of the songs can start. It can either be I'm messing around on the piano and I find a progression I like or a motif that I like, and then I go from there, and then comes the melody, and then comes the lyrics. Usually the melody and lyrics come at the same time. But I think that is the primary way that I write. Right. And there is a secondary way, which is the way I love, where I'm just driving or I'm walking or I'm at work and something pops up into my head and I step outside and I record it in my phone and return to it with a piano later and then, you know, harmonize it, put the chord progression on it, et cetera.
Do you sing like a hook? Do you start with a verse? Like, how do you kind of build it when you're driving?
It really depends. I mean, sometimes the lyric hook will come to me first. The chorus will come to me first. Other times it'll be the verse that comes to me first. I really do enjoy that way of songwriting though, because it really does feel like channeling something. Like it feels like it's just, it is me obviously, but it's like something bigger than me that's coming to me. Like, so there are some songwriters who say, oh, this came to me in a dream. This came to me in my sleep. And that feels so holy and so so kismet and like cosmic, you know. So yeah, I really do. And then when that happens, then it's just a little lyric puzzle, because I'll have like some lyrics in my mind, but there are little holes in them, and I'm like, okay, what's a three syllable word that means X that has emphasis on the second syllable, you know? And then it becomes just a fun little puzzle.
That's what I love too. It's like I find that sometimes I push myself, like I'll write a hook and I'll say, you know what, instead of that being my chorus, I'm going to make that my verse, so that I have to force myself to try and find a better chorus or a bigger something that puts it in that place. But there are a lot of times where I love where the verse comes first and I just know it's a verse, and it's like, to to the point where it's like, okay, this is, you're just building blocks and you're getting to that pre-chorus and then you get into the chorus. And then it's like, I kind of feel like right after I have a verse, pre-chorus and a chorus, or a verse and a chorus, it's almost like, it's almost a downer to be like, okay, I got to find that bridge, because you want it to be some different perspective, some, you know, change of attitude, or, you know, perspective, you know, really. And some, it makes me kind of like slow down a little bit when you're in those creative, like the juices are flowing and you're just kind of like in that place. But there's nothing better when that's happening. You know what I mean? It's like everything stands still. I don't want to be bothered. I don't want a phone call. I don't want anything to break that little place. Tell me how special that place is for you, because you must have it when you are in solitude, driving by yourself, I assume, in a room by yourself, or just playing piano. When do you find those moments to be the most important and vital for you?
Yeah, I would describe that as a state of flow, like the flow state. And I think it's so magical. And like you said, you're kind of not thinking about anything else other than the art. And I have my little, I was trying to see if I could find my notebook. I have my little songwriting notebook that I take with me everywhere I go. And it's really, I've been finding more and more recently that I will start writing and then it's just like my finger, it's just going off without, it's just like, it's going on and on and on. And yeah. And I've been trying to get better at letting that flow happen and then editing, allowing myself to edit after if I feel like something's not working. But honestly, I do feel like usually what comes out first is what's going to work. Yeah, at least for me.
You know, it's funny. It's like, I think as technology's changed too, my writing like flow has changed. Like where before it would just be me with a pen and paper and a guitar or a piano, and I'm just writing everything down. And now it's like me with a guitar, piano, and then cell phone recording voice memos, making it, you know, like I'll say, oh, this is my verse, this is my pre, whatever, and then sitting and kind of replaying those and like putting words to those melodies and trying to, and then like getting back to the instrument. So the last song I wrote, it was really odd. I wrote the verse. I think I wrote the pre-chorus, or I wrote the chorus. And then the next morning I had all the voice memos and I literally wrote it in bed in like 5 minutes, just all typing all the lyrics. And I'm like, I never would have done that 10, 15 years ago because everything was so hands-on. But it's like, sometimes the technology allows you to kind of like, you document it and you save it. You know what I mean? So you probably always been writing with the cell phone since you started, correct? So it's always the notebook and the cell phone are like hand in hand. Do you find you're writing more on one more than the other? Like that, you said that you got that notebook that's around with you everywhere. Do you back that notebook up on a computer? Do you back it up on your phone? Like how do you, what do you do to save your stuff?
Ooh, good question. So I usually like to do like a full performance of whatever song that I'm writing, just so that I have it on my phone, and then I'll save it as full. So I just like don't forget it and I can revisit it. But I also have a songwriting catalog that I've been working on. I use the app Notion. I don't know if you're aware of it.
No, I don't know Notion.
Notion, it's kind of like an all-purpose life organizer that's digital. And so it's very like malleable in terms of what you want to keep track of. You can, you know, this isn't a Notion ad, but basically I can create a table with the song title, its status, whether it's finished or not. Any other columns, you know, the date it was written, et cetera. And then I can put in the lyrics within that table. So yeah, I just click on the title and then I'll have the lyrics there. So I've been trying to catalog all of my songs, but it's been really hard because I've written like hundreds. yeah, so that's been a little project of mine. But I would say it's kind of right now disorganized, where some pieces are in the notebook. a lot of them are on Google Drive too, because I, you know, I bring songs to my band and I have to have the lyrics and lead sheet. Right. So it's just, things are kind of all over the place.
Well, you know, that brings me to my next question. It's like, how do you figure out what goes on a release? You have a record coming out. You've written 100 songs. How did you choose? What was it? 5 songs, 10 songs? Like, how did you figure out these are the songs I'm going to release first?
Yeah, it was 5 songs. I wrote them all around the same time, and they just felt very important, both to me, and it felt like the story was really important. And I love records that feel like there's a through line. Yeah. And there is a theme and there is a narrative and there's a very clear narrative. That's why people who listen to albums out of order, we're a different kind of person. That's a little crazy for me, but people who are like, just shuffle the album. I'm like, are you kidding?
That's how I feel. Like, and I also love, like, listening to an album is a lost art. Like, people don't listen to albums anymore. Everything's singles. It's like, oh, let's shuffle. And I'm like, no, let me listen to the whole artist statement, because I love that. I love when an artist makes a whole record and it's like, it's worth listening to. And it breaks my heart, to be honest, that CDs are they're not really existent anymore. And it's like, it's vinyl and streaming. And it's like, those are such dichotomies for the listener as far as the experience. I mean, you can see I've got records way over here. I've got records over here and I've got music on my computer, and it's like, when somebody sends me just a bunch of Spotify links, I'm like, yeah, most of the time I'm listening to those on my phone just because it's so handy. But man, there's nothing like listening to a whole record front to back with a good speaker system or just a car drive. There's nothing more magical to me when you discover an album that you love. Now, I want to ask you, you're coming out with your first record. That's important. That is the first statement of an artist. How did you kind of figure out the song order and what was going to be first and what was going to be last?
Yeah, I mean, my record is about navigating through loss. So it kind of it's chronological. So the first song, which we'll probably play later in the session, is about how difficult it is to heal without, you know, quarantining yourself from the rest of your world and isolating yourself from your friends. And so just how healing can be really lonely. And then, you know, going through all of the emotions of grief and loss is the middle of the EP. And then I have a fun little upbeat single called Earthshake at the end of the EP, which is the celebratory, like, woo, I'm feeling good. And it's,
you're like, we're not going to smile like that. We're not going to be all Debbie Downers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I needed to prove to, I don't know, someone, myself, that I could write a song that wasn't depressing. So that's what that closer was.
Let's play that first song first. What's the name of the first song?
It's called A Quiet Place.
Here's Sabrina Cyan with A Quiet Place.
It's been a quiet place since you've not been around. There's no more music or laughter. There's hardly any sound. Well, some people say but I'm too down, I'm too down.
To
so amazing. That was awesome.
Thank you. Tell me
what went into the instrumentation and arrangement and all of it.
Man, so many layers. So we tracked bass, drums, guitar, and like a guide vocal that didn't end up being the lead vocal. Probably forgetting. No, I think it was just bass, drums, and guitar we tracked on one day, and we did four songs for the EP, tracked those instruments together. Then I came in with the piano in two separate installments. So you might have heard that there was kind of rhythm piano, and then there was that kind of classical sounding, like higher register noodling in the bridge. Yeah. So I did a couple piano layers on the track. And then I arranged a, let's see. Yes, this was,
You had a horn section.
Yeah. So I arranged for French horn and trumpet. And this is for all of, this was really fun for me because I studied music in college and I would like write down sheet music and I got to build those skills and then put them to use in arranging the music for the EP. So I did the horn arrangements. And that those were tracked separately, then lead vocals, then background vocals on another day. So it was just like a piecemeal, which I recording is usually like that, but it's really fun because it's such a big instrumentation, such a wide instrumentation that it was really fun to play around with.
You wrote this song, were you thinking it was going to be this huge orchestrated kind of piece, or did you think it was going to be bare bones, and then as you were in the studio, you were like, you know what, we should add horns, we should add this and that. How did you kind of get it to that level?
No, I always thought it would be, I couldn't even envision it, like, you know, stripped back acoustic. I never play this acoustic because I feel like it doesn't really work. So when I wrote most of this EP, I was gigging a lot with my band at the time, and we were always looking for new material. So I think I would just write with them in mind. And so I was writing a lot of, you know, band stuff with bigger instrumentation for that reason. So that was my intention.
That's awesome. Well, I mean, it's also, you can tell when a songwriter has the vision for the song because all the parts work. It's like you're hearing things, like probably you're mapping it out on piano. Were you doing it, or were you doing it all in your head and kind of just doing it with sheet music? Were you kind of hearing like, oh, it should do this here, and then you're playing it so you're understanding what it's going to sound like?
Do you mean for the horn arrangement or just in general?
Well, I mean, because you lay down the piano and the band's there.
Now, yeah.
Then do you go back? Like what I do a lot is with string arrangements and horn arrangements, I'll go home and I'll actually write out something on keys so I have an idea. And I always come into the studio with an idea, like if horn players are coming in. So, like, there's room for maybe they have something that's going to be awesome. But if they don't, and, you know, it's funny, on one of my last records, I had, like, six of the most amazing horn players, like Lenny Kravitz's trumpet player, Justin Timberlake's horn section, like all these just crazy cats, and everybody was in the room and nobody wanted to take the lead. But I had kind of prepared a horn line and I was like, they were like, I think you got to take the lead. And I was like, okay, cool. And I just had an idea. But when you're in your process, where you kind of like, all right, I'm going to have a horn arrangement. Let me go back to the drawing board and kind of come up with something. Or were you doing that in the studio so that when horn players are coming, you know what to sing or play them or show them? Were you giving them charts? Were you singing the parts to them? Did you already play them out on piano? Like, how did you kind of work them out?
I fully notated them. So wow. I just did a full music notation because that's what I know. Because I did awesome composition, yeah, in college and outside of college. So,
and what a lot of writers may not know is it's the transposing that is the hardest part, because you have to transpose for the certain keys that the instruments are built in and made in or what they play in. So it's just not an easy process.
Right. So, I mean, but that's why I think I used MuseScore, even though I love Sibelius. It's just more expensive. I used MuseScore, and luckily they auto transpose everything. So I'm able to, you know, be at my piano. Or actually, I think my process for this one was, because they have the feature where you can click on the note, it'll you know, it'll make the sound of, it'll be a really bad MIDI trumpet, sure.
The technology is not perfected. Are good string and horn sounds for MIDI. It's the worst.
It's so bad. It's like really irritating, actually.
I agree. I totally agree.
Yeah, but you know, it gets the job done. You're able to hear what the line is. You're able to hear how the two lines work together. So that's how I arranged it.
Great mix. It's a great song. It's a great arrangement. I mean, that is a fantastic song. If anything's a good flex of what you can do in the studio and as a songwriter and as a singer, that song does it all. I mean, you got to feel very proud of what that song showcases.
Thank you so much. I like this song. I think I like all the other songs of my EP more, but I appreciate that. I feel like this one in retrospect, I haven't released it yet, but I wonder, you know, the thing about like, oh, your songs are too long. You got to shorten it so it becomes a single. So it's always interesting because the songs that I love, a lot of them are 6-7 minutes long and I listen to them in full.
Yep.
But there's the whole consideration of, you know, what is commercial infiltrates your brain.
I'm going to interrupt you for a second because this is an artist to artist. This is like the best advice I could ever give you. Not that you need it. Make the music that you want to hear. Do not take any advice as to shortening it, lengthening it, whatever it is, because at the end of the day, you are the tastemaker. And that song could be 12 minutes and it's going to be interesting because you are going to make it sound interesting for 12 minutes. So don't listen to anybody else. Don't listen to A&R people. Don't listen to managers. Don't listen to publishers, because if they can make music themselves that is half as good as what you're doing already, then they would. So honestly, I've never listened to people like that. It's like, I like listening to musicians I play with. I like arranging things and I'm always at the mercy of a good idea. So like, stay open as far as if an idea strikes you, but don't change your music so that it fits to a certain mold. And I will tell you that from experience, because on my first full length record, I did an EP. It was all like 5-minute songs, 4-minute songs, 3-minute songs. And when that was done, I could not wait to open my next record with a 9-minute song. And that's what I did. And that song is still one of our big closers. It's still one of our fan favorites. And every song is going to be born to a different length. So yeah. I find the artists that are the most interesting are doing exactly that. They will have a 9-minute song next to a 3-minute song, next to a 5-minute song, next to a 2-minute song. And that's what makes me captivated to listen to them, because if it's all 2-minute songs, I'm going to be bored too, you know? So I like when you have a band like Queen that plays an 8-minute or 7-minute jam, or, you know, the Grateful Dead or the Allman Brothers, or, you know, you have artists that are like James Brown that are doing 2.5-minute songs. And then you see the same song live and it's 7 or 8 minutes of jamming and funk. And it's like, yeah. So yeah, don't listen to people. Listen to your heart. Listen to the music, because it's great. It's fantastic. What are we going to play next?
I really appreciate that. Thank you so much. Yeah, I guess we can play Simple Pleasures, which is the penultimate track on the EP.
All right.
Go ahead. Should I give a little intro of it, or do you want to just jump right in?
Do an intro.
So I wrote the first part of this song in Joshua Tree after during a camping trip that I was on with my friends. And then I wrote the second verse, I think like 8 months later. And it just came to me when I was in Idlewild, California on another nature trip. So this song it's called Simple Pleasures. It's about immersing yourself and grounding yourself in nature when everything else feels so uncertain. And yeah, I think that's pretty much it.
Love it. Here's Simple Pleasures by Sabrina Cyan.
You can dig your roots into the sea. You can build four walls out of a song. peace of mind. You can make a life out of a body. Yeah, you dream, therefore you are. And don't you think that it's quite godly that it's gotten you this far? When you're lost in all elation, that you lose most everything, you've still got those simple pleasures that life will always bring. You can make good friends with trees of pine. Wash your soul with ginger tea. Nature has no shortage of sublime. You can find your purpose in leaves. You can make a life out of a body. Yeah, you dream, therefore you are. And don't you think that it's quite godly that it's gotten you this far? When you're lost in observation, that you lose most everything, you've still got those simple pleasures that life will always bring. Doesn't matter where you start. All you need a willing body and the sun, the earth, the stars. When you're lost and feel you're drowning, drown yourself in trees of green. Drown yourself that life will always bring.
So excellent. Beautiful. Let's talk about your vocals. You got a great voice.
Thank you.
How did you learn to sing? Were you in a chorus in middle school? Private lessons? Like, how did you kind of sculpt this voice?
I've always been singing. Like my mom says, from the womb, I was singing. Like, not from the womb. The second I exited, I should say. When I was in middle school, when I was in late elementary school, I joined my first choir, and then I was kind of in choirs ever since. I think I built the foundation of my voice through choral work. And I think that's a great foundation. Cause it teaches you a lot of things. It teaches you how to use your voice. I think the best way to learn how to sing is just to do it with regularity and to be able to take direction and implement that direction. So if you have a
choral, you listen too, because like when you're singing harmonies, it's how you're listening to blend and all of that, because that translates to how you're layering harmonies, you know?
Exactly. It's the thing about receiving feedback, whether that's through listening to the people around you or an actual, you know, direction from your choir director, receiving that feedback and being able to adjust what you're doing, you know, your placement, your volume, your dynamic contour, like being able to adjust just based on feedback, I think is how I learned how to sing, really. And then when I got to college, I majored in music, and it was mandatory to choose a primary instrument, even if you were focusing on composition. So my primary instrument was voice. And so they would kind of automatically give you like weekly voice lessons in college. So the first time I took a voice lesson was in college. Yeah.
We have a very parallel music experience because I started singing in a church choir, and then I started singing in a professional children's choir from the age of like 7 to 13, called the LA Children's Chorus. It's actually where Billie Eilish came out of. She had her the LA Children's Chorus in one of her videos at the Hollywood Bowl for this like special, you know, where there's nobody in the audience at the Hollywood Bowl. I don't know if you've seen it, but she came out of that group as well. And I have so many fond memories of those being my first musical experiences, because you're listening to 100 kids, or, you know, blending in 3, 4, 5 harmony, like challenging rhythmic music, African music, it's like Jewish songs, like Russian folk songs, whatever it is. And that breadth of like what you're hearing and how you're singing in different languages. I'm sure you sang in different languages. I studied voice as well. I studied opera at USC. And it's like, you're learning the art of voice, but you're also learning the art of arrangements. So when you, and I don't know if you feel this way, I love singing lead vocals. I'll always love singing lead vocals. But to me, there's nothing better than singing harmonies. I love singing harmonies. I still love singing harmonies. I was in an a cappella group. I miss concert choir still. I miss that power of a ton of voices in a room singing together in total harmony. There's nothing more magnificent. I know you know this. Tell me how that has, you know, lent, you know, a musical expertise and growth and facility as well as creativity for what you're doing.
Yeah. Wow. Another great question. Thank you. I can't even emphasize enough how much that experience of singing in harmony with other people has just been the foundation and the core of everything that I create. Right. I think, of course, in a practical way, it gives you a really good sense of harmony. Listening to other people, being able to notice lines that they're singing that you can incorporate into what you're, you know, composing. So in that way, yes, but also I think it grounds what the purpose of music is, which for me is communal. It's, honestly, the reason it's taken me so long to put out a record is because I really just want to be perform live, because it's something so special to be in a room with people and you're present with them and they're present with themselves. They can finally, there are very few spaces nowadays where people can really be in their bodies and in their emotions, because we're like, you know, so numbed by all of these like, you know, of social media and like so many distractions. And so I think it's such a beautiful thing when you're like present in a group and singing with them or performing with them. Even an audience has that same energy. So it's just pivotal.
Well, and also what I love too is, you know, there's something where everybody's listening to the same thing to make something better, whether it's a band, whether it's a choral group or an a cappella group, whatever it is, there's something where it's like, this is what I love about being in a band. It's like, you're all working together. Like nobody can be stronger or better or more forceful or less forceful or, you know, more relaxed or the same. It's all has to be in perfect balance with itself. And everybody, when it's right and when it's the best, is when everybody's listening. And there's so much restraint. And I find that is the most powerful that music can be, when it's like you have all these powerhouses together in a room and everybody's showing the perfect amount of restraint, that it creates this other energy of power and otherworldly energy that comes into the room or the space or whatever it is to give you all the feels. You know what I mean? It's like there's something that is powerful about music when it's just you and the instrument and you sing in the song, but then when you add different elements and you add more and more people and everybody's working and building to make that better, that is what is right with the world. I don't trust many things in the world, but I will always trust that because that is what makes me believe in people. That's what makes me believe in music. That's what makes me believe in harmony because it exists. You know what I mean? It's like, it may not exist in the world, but it exists in music. And I think you're doing that in a really powerful way with what you're creating, how you're creating it. And I hope you never stop. What are we going to play next? I want to play all your songs so we don't run out of time. What are we playing next?
So this is a song called Pure Light. It's not recorded, but this is a live performance that I did at Kulex Woodshed in late 2023. So it's kind of old, but
I played there in 2006, I think. So I love it. This is awesome.
They're great. I hope that, you know, people go out and support them more. But this is a song about, it kind of encompasses all of my views on life and spirituality and love. So do awesome. That what you will.
Pure Light, name it, Pure Light?
Pure Light.
Here's Pure Light by Sabrina Sine. So great. That's awesome. What a great performance. Where can people find you, Sabrina, if they want to follow you online, They want to see your next gigs. When can people expect your release to?
It's going to be Instagram at Sabrina Cyan. That's Sabrina like the witch and Cyan like the color, C-Y-A-N. And yeah, I'll be definitely posting about my new releases on there.
Well, you are a fantastic songwriter. You and I are going to play a lot of shows together for sure. And I just think you're remarkable. So check out Sabrina's music, please, because my God, if people aren't flocking to hear her sing, then what are you listening to? Because it is just beautiful music. Let's just leave it at that, right? Shall we?
Thank you so much. And yeah, I look forward to it.
All right, Sabrina, thank you so much for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood. On behalf of Sabrina, myself, and Sam, stay cool. Much love, respect, and we'll see you guys next week. Peace, love, and hair grease.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Korula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.